before he gets started, excuse me. Don't ever lend him any money. Thank you.
He'll never get his back. Thank you, Bill. They told me I only had 4 hours to talk, so. I'm an addict. My name is Marty. Hi, folks. Can the people downstairs hear me? Can you see me? Well, it's a good thing you can't smell up here. Somebody farted. Wondering why we're here. This is it.
Yeah.
Now I'm taping the convention. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to be here. It's a privilege and an honor. And just respectful to you anytime I'm asked to speak. I'm on the airplane flying down with this hotshot project manager of some big corporation heading somewhere, and I'm sitting there talking to him about being a dope fiend and stuff, and and I get off the plane and I'm not expecting anybody to pick me up because they told me that there was a shuttle that ran back and forth and all I had to do was call the hotel and the shuttle would pick me up. Would you slow down over there? Tough time keeping up with her. Wait till she gets to resurface. It's normally done like this. I know that everyone in here is a professional speaker. I know that when you sit in the audience and there's a speaker, you mumble and grumble, and I like what he had to say, I didn't like what he had to say, and I'm not here for you. I'm here for me. I got a job to do and you got a job to do. Mine's to talk, yours is to listen. If you get through before me, you can go to sleep, you can leave. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I'll be here till I'm done. Do we have any drug addicts here tonight? Alcoholic addicts? Cross addicted? Chemically addicted? Dual addicted? Poly addicted? Chemically dependent? Chemical denial? I'd like to share something with you out of the basic text in Narcotics Anonymous, but they didn't have one. That's a different book. Well, I'd like to share something with you. For all the drug addicts that are here, as well as the alcoholic addicts, chemically dependent, and the list goes on. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive with respect to any mood-changing or mind-altering substance. Alcoholism is too limited of a term for us. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive.
Yeah!
I used to think that I was a drug addict. I know what a drug addict is. That's the addict you drag to the meeting that doesn't want to come. I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I went to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous on January the 1st of 1973. I relapsed 13 times. The last time I got high was February the 19th, 1975. I thought that I was a drug addict. I thought that I was an alcoholic addict. I would be anything you wanted me to be. And I wanted to be different. When I first got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was a funky, chunky, drunk, junkie, slimy, dope fiend, whatever you wanted to call me. As long as I was different, hip, slick, and cool. I simply know today that I'm simply an addict. I don't go to any other fellowships other than the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't believe in any other fellowships. Narcotics Anonymous is the only fellowship I know that doesn't deal with a chemical. Narcotics Anonymous deals with the disease of addiction. We're not interested in what or how much you used. And I hear people come into the rooms. Well, I'm a heroin addict. Hey! And now, well, I'm a crack addict. God damn it. Well, I never smoked any crack. When I was using crack, it was a sexual term. I don't know what it feels like to smoke crack. Feels like to drink table wine. You might not know what it's like to huff paint. You change colors. It doesn't matter what you used in Narcotics Anonymous. When I got clean, there weren't many meetings. And so we had to go other places. And you had to identify yourself as one certain thing, that you were powerless over one certain chemical. And if you weren't, and you identified yourself as anything else, you were not welcome. In Narcotics Anonymous, a lot of times, if you identify yourself as other things, you may made to be felt that you're not welcome. But you are welcome. You're just still in denial. Drugs were never my problem. Drugs were the solution to all my problems. The only problem is they quit working. If they hadn't quit working, I can tell you one thing, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Because I like getting high. I just didn't like coming to in a place like Juarez Jail with blonde hair. If you could get high and stay high 24 hours a day, I would be sitting in my rocking chair, smoking, snorting, sticking, or shoving something up my ass, and enjoying it. It doesn't matter what you did to get here. When I first walked in, I thought this was real nice for you. But I didn't deserve and have a right to be here because of the things that I've done. If you knew the things that I've done in my life, you wouldn't let me come here. So I could never share those with you. I'll tell you a few funny stories and then you'll like me. But I'm not going to tell you the real deal. Getting clean was real hard. And it was terrifying. Because I've never been happy in my life. I knew how to be miserable. But I didn't know how to be happy. And I didn't get clean to be miserable. I got clean to be happy. And I didn't get clean to be some type of spiritual giant either. You see them float through your home group, you know? Hi, I'm Mr. Wonderful and I've got it all together. And let me tell you what you need to do. You need to mind your own business, asshole. Are you my sponsor? No, shut up. What got me here? I was walking down the street one day, I was smoking a joint, a seed popped, it scared the shit out of me. I rushed right down to Narcotics Anonymous and I've been here ever since. What got me here? My father beat my mother. My father beat me. My father used the drug alcohol. Only occasionally. And when he did, he turned into a monster. All of my uncles were addicts. All of my aunts were addicts. 10 years ago, we buried my father. 11 years before that, I 12-stepped him. My father died in recovery. I have more respect for the man today than I ever had for him living. I still talk to him every day. I understand today the things he did that I didn't understand when I was young. You people taught me how to understand him. You people taught me how to forgive him. And you taught me how to love him. And you taught me that I was worthy of the love that he had for me, that I never felt that I had. When I was 18 years old, I landed in Vietnam. Because I was a warrior. With blonde hair. And all I had when I got there was my little white ass and 2 shaky hands to scratch it. And I was scared to death. The first night I got to Nam, I got high. The first night I got to Nam, it was the first time I'd ever seen a human being's body blow apart. It was the first time I ever seen a black person bleed. And his blood was red. And he died in my arms. I haven't had any racism since. Narcotics Anonymous is an equal opportunity employer. In Narcotics Anonymous, you're not different because you're white, you're not different because you're black. We didn't sell white dope to white people, black dope to black people. In Narcotics Anonymous, you're not different because of where you grew up. Had this guy back home that kept relapsing all the time, and I used to do a sponsorship meeting with my guys, and one night he had relapsed again, and he called me, and I said, well, you need a sponsor. He said, I know. I said, get your ass over here. You got one tonight. Tomorrow you can figure out what you want to do then. But tonight you got one, and it's me. Accept it or reject it. I don't give a shit if you don't like it. Get over here. And he came over. And he got there and said, well, if I knew he was going to be here, I wouldn't have come. Talking about another guy that was there. He said, you guys don't understand. You don't understand where I grew up. I grew up on the other side of the tracks. I grew up in South Baltimore. I said, what's your brother's name? He said, Tommy. He said, how long has he been clean? He said, 8 years. I said, where the fuck did he grow up? It don't matter where you come from. You don't come in here whining and snotting and puking about where I come from. I had it tougher than everybody. Skid Row's located in your gut. Somebody asked me, how the hell do you get somebody off of Skid Row? It's 60 feet across Skid Row and you're out. Wall Street, right there. What's the problem? The problem? It's 1,000 miles in your mind. You don't deserve it. You can't make it. You don't fit in. And today, standing here with almost 22 years clean, the wind still blows and my gut opens up and it says, you ain't going to make it. You ain't going to hold out. You don't fit in anymore. You got too much time and you ain't got your shit together. People in your home group don't love you. Don't tell anybody I said that. Mr. Bill said, don't lend me any money. You can lend me some money. He doesn't run my life, he helps me guide it. There's no dictatorship in Narcotics Anonymous. Because all the dictatee has to do is say screw off and the dictatorship's over with. In 1969, I came home from Nam. A very sick, hurt, saddened, lonely, frightened. I was probably more scared coming home from Nam than I went and went. I was scared of you. I was scared of how I was going to be accepted. I was afraid I wasn't going to fit in. And I didn't want to fit in. And yet I wanted to fit in. When I got clean, there was a guy in Nam with me named Ole. And Ole and I got high every day. And every day Ole and I tried to quit. And every day Ole and I got high again. And we did a lot of things to a lot of people. We did things to people's property, to their homes, their animals, their children, to humanity in general. Things today that I still have a tough time dealing with and forgiving me for. In 1986 or something like that, one of my first sponsors called me and said he was coming to Baltimore and he wanted me to pick him up at the airport. And I said, great. He said, what are you doing in town? He said, we're going to the wall. I said, what wall? He said, the Vietnam Memorial Wall. I said, no, you're going to the wall, but I'm not going to no damn wall. He said, no, we're going. It's a WE program. You know, picking him up at the airport. And Bob spent the night at our house. And slept on our couch downstairs in the living room. Bob's this tall, Chinese-looking black guy. Or short, Chinese-looking black guy. I guess he was tall because I looked up to him. And my son Jimmy, who was like 7 or 8 years old at the time, comes down the stairs and he looks and he sees Bob and he says, good morning. And Bob said, good morning, who are you? He said, I'm Jimmy, who are you? He said, I'm Bob. And Jimmy says, nice to meet you. He said, well, you're a fine looking young man. He said, thank you. Going to detox this morning? Bob said, why would I be going to detox? He said, well, usually people that sleep on my mom and dad's couch go to detox the next day. My dad gets paid a lot of money for that. And I did. I could get $5,000 a head at one time because I cared. When I first started working in treatment a little over 18 years ago, I wasn't even making minimum wage. My first 3 months clean, I was living in a horse stall in Orlando, Florida, taking care of 13 harness horses, working 18 hours a day, making 50 bucks a week, and hitting 9 meetings a week of Narcotics Anonymous. Bob and I went to the wall, and I had looked for Ole ever since I got clean and could never find him. And it never dawned on me. And we got there, this guy comes up with this big green book, what they call large literature at the wall, with all the names in it of the dead and the missing in action. And he said, can I help you find somebody? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for a friend. And I gave him Ole's name, and he went through his book. And he said, is this your friend? And I said, yeah. And he walked me over to where his name was on the wall, and he took a piece of paper and he scratched his name off and he handed it to me. And Bob took me over to a friend of his that he lost. And I helped him scratch his name off. And Bob and I sat there for about 2 hours and just held each other and cried. We were getting up to leave, and there was some guys standing there with a tent for the POW and missing in action, and they had a little cup you could throw some change in. I threw some change in. He said, put down your unit you were with, and I wrote down the 173rd. And he came around from behind the table and he gave me a hug and he said, welcome home. My family hadn't even said that to me yet. At the World Convention in Baltimore, Mr. Bill and I took a bunch of non-vets to D.C. to the wall with a video camera. And we took them all to that green book. And we helped them find their name on the wall, and we videoed them, and each guy helped the other one scratch the guy's name off the wall and then had him turn around to the camera and tell us something about their friend. Without Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be able to feel what I feel. And though a lot of you weren't in on the street, you were in your own. And I want to tell you, welcome home. The war is over. any tough guys in Narcotics Anonymous. There's a lot of bad attitudes. But there aren't any tough guys. Ain't no gorillas. Bunch of cream puffs. Hard on the outside. Just like this little skinny guy here. My wife and I and his wife and I went to the wall. We found his buddy Charlie. And you don't know what it means unless you've sponsored somebody. You don't know what that feels like unless you've sponsored somebody who you've seen come into these rooms and the desperation that we get here. And they work their ass off on the steps. And they go through their fourth and fifth step and they don't feel like they deserve for anybody to even listen to it. And they sit there and they cry and you hold them, you hug them and you rock them and you tell them that you love them. And that they got a right to be here. That they ain't junk trash in an accident. And that there ain't no mistakes today. Bam Bam came in last night. Stand up, Bam Bam. He said to Jacob, you got anybody to introduce you yet? I want to introduce you. And I said, no, Bill's already paid me. But sometimes in recovery we do things in the insanity of our recovery because it's not just the insanity of our addiction. And Bam and I lived in Florida together. I can say that three times. I'm an addict and an addict and an addict. One day I was driving down the road through North Miami and I seen Bam Bam in front of me. So I got right up on his ass. And every time he made a turn, I made a turn. Every time he made a turn, I made a turn. And he keeps looking in his mirror. And he'd speed up, and I'd speed up. And I'm right on his ass. And he made a fast turn here and a fast turn here, and I followed him. And then he pulled up in front of his house and slammed on the brakes. And I pulled right up beside his car, and he reached down like this, and he'd come up out of his car like that with a goddamn rocket. Biggest gun I ever seen in my life. Put it over the hood of the car. What the hell do you want? I said, just want to know what step you're on, Bubba. But he finally got the bookie or whoever it was after him off his back. I don't know who it was. I met a lady in Narcotics Anonymous. I was chair of the Chesapeake Potomac region. I was somebody very important. Had it all together. Everyone respected me. And if you didn't, I didn't allow you to speak to me. Because you normally didn't. And I was at a regional meeting and this little lady was sitting at the end of the table and she looked at me and I looked at her and I winked at her. And she winked back. I knew I was getting lucky. And at the time, her name was Ruth. And after the meeting, the regional meeting, there was a speaker meeting and a dinner and a dance and she asked me to dance. And we danced all night. And she had two lovely children, two of the worst, rottenest, spoiled, arrogant, filthy mouth, 6 and 8 year olds I'd ever met in my life. We were at a dance one night, in a dance at a church, and they completely destroyed the basement. I mean, they demolished it.
North Carolina.
I was in Virginia, actually. And those were your kids. So after a few dances, we went downstairs. Well, in between that time, we got married and had sex and did all that stuff. And after a while dancing, this one night at this dance, we went downstairs to check on the kids, and the people from the church were there. And they went off on my wife. What is your problem, lady? Don't you care about your kids? It's after 10:30 at night. You need to talk to the Lord. My wife said, you need to go fuck yourself. Then we cleaned up the church and we haven't had a dance there since. Those two boys had a father who was in jail and had been in jail for the last 3 million years for attempted murder. He's also the guy that respected my present wife to the point of beating her with belt buckles, stabbing her in the neck, and showing his manlyhood and respect for those vows that they took. He got out of jail a few years ago, and our oldest boy, Jay, went to live with him, and he immediately taught Jay how to break in houses, smoke crack cocaine, and rob people. When Jay got caught, and his daddy would do nothing to help him get out of jail. So I hired an attorney, and I got him out of jail. The whole time I raised Jay, he would hardly give me any respect. He would hardly ever tell me he loved me. I wasn't his father, and I wasn't telling him what the hell to do. This weekend, Jay came home from Fort Benning, Georgia, where he graduated from jump school. Right after he got out of jail, his father murdered a man in Ocean City, and the cops killed him right after that. When Jay went to sponsor, I sponsored a guy that sponsored my son Jay, and Jay went to sponsorship weekend with me. And we did the meeting, my father, my hero, and my son sat there. He said he might have lost this is hard to do when you got diarrhea. He said he may have lost his biological father, but he still had his dad. I have another son in Texas who's 22 years old, will be 22 in December 17th, that I walked out on when he was 3 weeks old and never went back. That young man and I today have a beautiful relationship. October the 20th, he made me a grandfather. My other son, Jimmy, I turned 47 last Sunday. Jimmy didn't call me. By the way, Jay's clean. He's been clean a year or 800 years. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is he's got. Jimmy's also clean a couple of years. Lives on his own. Jay's engaged to get married. Jimmy's engaged to get married. Jimmy didn't call me on my birthday, and neither did Jason. Monday on Veterans Day, Jason called me, answered the phone, and said, hello. And the voice on the other side said, welcome home, Dad. He said, you know, it's Veterans Day. I said, thanks, son. I love you. I said, what else? He said, nothing. I said, nothing. He said, nothing. I said, well, what about my birthday? He said, well, that's in November. He said, fuck, this is November. Damn, I'm sorry, Dad. I said, no, you're not sorry. You're all right. My son Jimmy didn't call me wishing me happy birthday. Monday evening, I'm watching Monday Night Football, and there's a knock on the door. I said, what the hell is that? And I went over and opened up the door, and he said, hope I'm not too late for your old ass. I said, thank God you didn't die before I got your card here. I know you're old. My wife's been clean 14 years in Narcotics Anonymous. She's never seen another meeting list or meeting of any other meeting other than Narcotics Anonymous. She went to her first meeting, and she came back, and she's been back ever since. Right now, she's in Johns Hopkins School of Nursing in Baltimore, working on getting her bachelor's degree. She has since changed her name to Mary because that's more professional. I call her Sybil. A week and a half ago, she walked out in the living room, and this lady's been studying from 5 o'clock in the morning till 8 when she leaves. She comes home, goes straight to the office in the back room, and studies until I get dinner ready. Then she comes out for 15 minutes each, goes back in the office, and comes back out about 1 or 2 in the morning and goes to bed, then gets back up at 4 or 5 in the morning and starts all over again, and has been doing it for the last 2 years. A week and a half ago, she walked out in the living room bawling like a baby, and this lady don't cry. You could kick her ass, and she won't cry. I can't kick her ass. And she cried all that day. And she came out the next day, and she cried all day, and she couldn't stop crying. And she broke. And all I could do was just hold her. And I told her, fuck nursing school. You can stay home and stick a thermometer up my ass. I love it when people laugh, you identify. And it hurts. Because she's been my rock. She's been the tough guy.
And all I can do is just love on her. I don't abuse the privilege of being a husband today. I don't abuse the privilege of being a father. I don't abuse the privilege of being a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but it's happened to me. You speak at a meeting or share in a meeting and say something spiritual, which I do a hell of a lot. And after the meeting, you can see him coming all the way from the other end of the room. Pretty like it was a good damn good speech you made there. Damn good. Like what's said too. I was wondering. And the nice thing about Narcotics Anonymous is you can think anything you want to. He says, I was wondering, you think you could give me a ride back to that there halfway house? If I got to be in by 10:30, they're going to kick me out. And the nice thing about Narcotics Anonymous is you can think anything you want. You can look him dead in the eye and say,
no.
Fuck you. Who the hell do you think you are asking me for a ride? You stupid goof. Spastic ass retard. Do you know who the hell I am? I'm Marty E. from Out of a Tree. Next to God, I'm the best hope you got, pal. See one of them jerk-offs in the back of the room? Wearing Mr. Bill's jewelry? Why don't you get one of them goofballs to give your ass a ride home? Because, see these cats over here? See the guy with the BMW? I'm riding with them over to Denny's after the meeting. They're going to talk about who they're going to nominate for RSR. And if I give your goofball ass a ride, I won't get the position. And the nice thing about Narcotics Anonymous is I can thank every bit of that. As long as I say, sure, pal, I'll give you a ride. Fuck them. It's about action. Narcotics Anonymous is about action. Sponsorship is about being the guider, not a disciplinarian, not a god, a friend. Sponsorship isn't about, well, if you need to talk to me, pal, you call me. I'm your sponsor. I've already had what you got. Where you are, I've been. Where I am, you've never been. Why the hell should I call you? And being a sponsor is calling that sponsee. It's about waking him up in the morning. How you feeling, Bubba? I was thinking about you. Calling him at work. Man, I ain't supposed to get no phone calls at work. Fuck him, Bubba. Just want to tell you I love you. If you lose your job, meet me at the noon meeting. Narcotics Anonymous isn't about working your program. It's about working the Narcotics Anonymous program. And I don't know if you got this problem here, but we sure got it where I come from. All these people who want to tell you who God is. Well, I'd first like to thank my higher power, who I choose to call. I don't give a damn what you choose to call your higher power. You can call him Spot for all I care. Because every time I hear somebody do that, I think, Damn, I got the wrong one again this week. If Jesus Christ is your higher power, you're welcome in Narcotics Anonymous. If Jesus Christ isn't your higher power, you're welcome in Narcotics Anonymous. And if you think you're Jesus Christ, you're welcome in Narcotics Anonymous. My higher power is none of your business. Plain and simple. That's between me and my higher power and who I choose to share that with after a meeting, not during a meeting. Because during a meeting, it's a violation of traditions for me to tell you who my higher power is. It's a blatant violation. Everybody tells you stuff like, God's going to take care of you. And I want to say, which one? Which one what? Which God? What are you talking about? There's only one. I said, well, I heard six different ones in the meeting. Another one I like, it's going to get better. When? I heard a guy sharing a meeting one time. I've been clean for 18 years and it keeps getting better and better and better. And when I don't think it can get any better, it gets better, better, and better. I got the flip side. Just when I think it ain't going to get worse, it gets worse. It gets worse. And it gets worse. And just when I think it can't get any worse, it gets worse. Narcotics Anonymous isn't about it's all going to be okay. It's not about you're going to get that job and that new car. It's about you're going to make it through whatever it is that happens. During the readings tonight, they were reading that part that says, and everybody screamed out, principles before personalities. And then some of them same assholes, after the meeting, will tell you to stick with winners. Now somebody explain that to me. If it's principles before it's personalities, how can you pick the difference? If you're sitting in this room in Narcotics Anonymous, you're a winner. And if you're sitting outside Narcotics Anonymous, that don't mean you're a loser. Tonight it means you're fucking cold. It's about people. And it's about acceptance. And it's about accepting people for where they're at, not where you want them to be. And I want to talk about a couple more things before y'all go to dance and try to get laid. Forget to wear a helmet. I don't want to hear no more of this shit about I wanted to feel close to him. You might get that feeling for a long time. And it'll fucking kill you. It ain't about coming in here and killing people. It's about coming in here and loving each other into recovery. I wish all our ups and downs could be between the sheets, but it just don't work that way. Newcomers aren't here for my abuse. Check her out. I got to get her first. Right? Heart disease can come out of our neck at any given moment. In any way. It can be through sex, masturbation, fornication. Gambling. Stand up, yes. 1, 3, 5. At one time, a few years ago, I was living in Miami, going the High Line in the morning, placing my morning bet, flying through the Bahamas, hitting the crap table, making it back by 4:30 to place my evening bet at High Line, while I went by the horse track to place my bets for the next day of what was coming in there. Getting markers at every casino. $30,000, $40,000, $60,000. Not counting what I was ripping off the top, what I was supposed to be bringing home. The phones were getting cut off. We were getting evicted. But I was telling my wife, when I went to work, I just didn't make any money today. Trying to hit the big one. And I'm going to hit it yet, goddammit. And my mind tells me that. It's not if, but when. And I did it for months, every day. The bookies even whipped my ass, and I didn't pay them and still took another bet. Because I'm a good dope fiend. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I've quit gambling completely. I've lost my borrowing power. But I can say that I haven't been to the horse track all year. Haven't been to the High Line. I still play the lottery. I didn't surrender to gambling. I didn't quit gambling. I'm just not abusing the privilege today. Because today it's not gambling. Today it's an investment. I love it when I can dope fiend myself. As we grow older in Narcotics Anonymous, things happen in our lives. The first big bout that we've seen happen in our lives was the bout with AIDS. That's the biggest one we've seen. And it's still taking us. Every day. There are times in recovery as you get older or as you have accidents in automobiles or what may happen that you may have to take some type of medication that you don't want or need in your mind to take, that you're scared to death to take, that everyone in Narcotics Anonymous will tell you not to take, because we have a lot of doctors in here. Six months ago, I was on 400 milligrams of time-release morphine a day for my back. I have been on different opiates for the last almost 2 years for my back. If they could slice my ass open and cut out the problem, they could start right now in front of all of you. And they can't find my problem. And when I went to the doctor, I gave him two choices. Three choices. Find my problem. If you can't, give me something for it. Or give me Dr. Dvorkian's phone number. Because I'm ready to check out. Because pain is real. And you can pray about it all you want to. And you can massage it. And you can put TENS units on it. And you can shove ice packs up your ass. But sometimes, nothing else works. And you got to be real careful who you talk to about it. Because if you talk to this one over here, and you had to take something, you need to pick up a white key tag, asshole, you used. And if you talk to this one over here, you need to take more. And the only thing I can tell you is, if it happens in your life, seek out and search and find somebody who's been there. And talk to your sponsor about it. My medication stays right on the counter. My wife has never counted it. She's never handed me my dose. She's not my fucking nurse. She's my wife. It's my responsibility. I've seen 5 guys, not seen, I've either seen or heard of 5 different guys in the last 2 months that had to take opiates for some type of operation or pain, who either overdosed or relapsed and haven't come back. I have no desire to get high. Getting high to me does not appeal to me. I have yet to abuse my medication, not to say that I won't. But I have to work real hard on what I believe in. Not work real hard on not doing it, just work hard on what I believe in. I had a guy at my house a few weeks ago spend a couple of days with us, and he said, "Man, I'm really concerned about you." I said, "I don't know about that. I relapsed. I broke my knee and they gave me some Percocets, and within 3 days I ate 4 bottles." Now this guy talks program every 5 seconds, quotes program every 3 seconds, will correct you on all your defects of character every 2 seconds, and he just mouths program all day long. "Beep, I'm going, bro." One of those, "He knows the program." I said, "I'll tell you the difference between you and I, is you're giving it everything you got because you're afraid you might use again." I said, "I don't wake up every morning and give it everything I got. Narcotics Anonymous isn't a outside entity that I have to like bring into my life every day. Narcotics Anonymous is part of my being today." When I wake up in the morning, I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous, in my heart and in my soul. It's the most important thing in my life. It's the only thing that affords me the ability to have my family, my sponsor, my friends. The only thing. Nothing else does. May the 15th, a guy I sponsored for 7 years had been in, well, a few years ago he moved up to D.C. because he got ran out of Florida because he was one of the ones that started the bogus texts. And if you don't know what that's about, you'll hear about it, or you'll talk to somebody and they'll tell you, they'll inform you. He decided that a paperback copy of the basic text could be made for like 60 cents. That addicts in jail and institutions could get the message of Narcotics Anonymous that weren't getting it because they couldn't afford it and what the World Service Office was charging for it. All their treatment centers could get it cheaper than the home group. And he had the money to design the plates and make it happen, and he did. And he passed out tons of books. And he got sued by the World Service Office. Mind you, this is the same guy that I know time after time after time would go to a meeting, and that goofball from the other end of the room would come at him from after the meeting. And he'd say, "How you doing, Bubba?" "Oh, not real good. How long you been clean?" "Oh, shot up this morning about 6:30. "Yeah, when was the last time you ate?" "I don't know." "Come on, Bubba, let's go get something to eat." And he'd take him to eat. And then 3 hours later, he'd be on a plane with him and take him to California to a convention for the weekend. And then the next week, he'd do it to another addict. And the next day, he'd do it to another addict. Time and time again. Always given to the addict that still suffered. After the baby blue bogus text thing happened, his home group in his area denounced him of all of his positions, told him he wasn't welcome anymore. He moved to D.C. and tried to go to meetings and didn't feel comfortable, didn't feel like he was a part of, didn't feel welcome, felt talked about, gossiped about. So he started shooting dope again. Then he couldn't find any veins and he started cutting his legs open with his butcher knife at home. And every 2 days I'd drive over to D.C. to spend some time with him and try to get him to go to a meeting. And I'd get him as far as the midday lotto machine. But we'd go out in the park and we'd sit and we'd talk. One day I took my son, little Marty, who's 10 years old, who's the love of my life. He says, "Daddy, I love you every day." He says, "Daddy, come in and pray with me. It's time to go to bed." And I asked him, "Why do you love me so much?" He says, "Because you're so cool." And I took little Marty over to D.C. with me one day to see Lou. And he looked at Lou and he said, "Lou, you smell bad. What's wrong?" He said, "I haven't had any money to wash my clothes." And it was because his legs were nothing but rotten flesh. And finally we got him back to Miami to a hospital and started doing skin grafts. And then finally, after a period of time, we got him willing to go to treatment and detox and send him to California. He went to treatment for 6 months and he was in charge of taking care of the rabbits. Two or three weeks after he got out of treatment, he tried to go to meetings and he called me and he said, "I just don't feel right. I'm not comfortable." And he went out and he bought a week's supply of dope, got a hotel room, and the first shot he did killed him. And I can tell you right now, did the dope kill him? Or did the arrogance and the gossip and the intolerance of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous kill him? We got to learn to respect each other. God damn it, I've got a right to be wrong. And I will take that right. But at the same token, I've also got to give you the privilege and the ability to have your wrong. And if we allow each other to have our wrongs, and accept each other for our defects of character instead of trying to live through somebody else. It's kind of like the parent who takes their kid to church. "You're going to church so I'll look good. You're going to go to college and get a degree." You know, these parents that live through their kids, it's going to make them what they could never be so that they can brag about how great they are all of a sudden. Fuck them. If nobody's told you they love you today, ain't my fault. Take a look at your program. If nobody's told you they love you today, maybe they don't know how. Maybe it's our responsibility to teach them. Maybe it's our responsibility to teach that alcoholic addict not just good things like I used to do. I'm Billy Bob Blueback, and I'm an alcoholic addict. Hubbob. Maybe it's our responsibility to take the text over to him and sit down and say, let me explain to you. I mean, we do that little dipshit, doodle-dot garbage before the meeting, our little statement of identity that goes over people's head like a lead balloon. They don't hear it. Maybe it's our responsibility after the meeting to go sit down with them saying, how you feel, Bob? You feeling better since the meeting? Want to come over? Come over and say, let's get a cup of coffee. I'd like to explain something to you. This is called our basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. This is how thousands and thousands of addicts have stayed clean. They all got together and they wrote this book. And then they got together again and they rewrote it. And then they got together again and they rewrote it. And then they got together again and they paid somebody outside the fellowship to read it. But we're not going to get into that part right now. The Narcotics Anonymous is about, you're not any different than us. Alcohol is just a drug. It's like if you take marijuana and you sit it here, and you take cocaine and you sit it here, and you take alcohol and you sit it here, and tester's glue and you sit it here, how many diseases do you have? And the guy will say, four? No, you ain't even got a disease sitting there. You just got a bunch of different drugs. But our diseases are the mind, body, and the spirit. Our psyche depends upon sedation to resolve conflict, and it always will. That's the problem. And the solution is the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. And there are other things you can do. Narcotics Anonymous is not the only way to get clean. It just is for me. If acupuncture works for you, enjoy it. If you have to have a therapist, after you run out of money, and your insurance goes out, and somebody got paid for referring you there, after you get done with your therapist, and your head's still all fucked up, come on back with us and we'll work the steps with you. Because that's the bottom line. No matter how much outside help you get, we still got to come back and work the steps together. If treatment worked, if detox worked, we wouldn't need Narcotics Anonymous.
Well,
go detox, shape up, and get a life, asshole. Detox is only discovery. Narcotics Anonymous is recovery. Maybe when you're clean as long as I've been, almost 22 years, you can have what I've got. I've got an 85 Toyota Corolla with 225,000 miles on it. I've got $11 in my pocket that I borrowed from Bill this morning. I have an eviction notice on my apartment. My phone's cut off the 19th. And I can't even afford a pack of rubbers to go fuck myself. Now, am I successful? I didn't use today. But then again, using and dying doesn't scare me. If I could use and die, that would be an option sometimes in my mind. I hear people say, "Oh no, if I use again, oh no, it'll be the last one, I'll die." Where do you get that ticket, pal? That doesn't scare me. Using, going to jail, getting a boyfriend named Bubba, that scares me. That's real. I don't have a desire to use. I have a desire to stay clean. If you're new tonight, or if you're coming back for the 300th time, and nobody wants to hear why this time, remember, it ain't one day at a time in Narcotics Anonymous. I hear this crap all the time. One day at a time. We got a whole damn book on just for today. It's just for today. I lived one day at a time for so long, I got a week behind. All I have is today. You can't give me no more than that. A guy told me last week, "Damn, man, 21 years clean. Whew. I wish I had that." I said, "Well, shit, you can have it all, but today that's all I need." I said, "Okay, you got it. You feeling better?" It ain't about time. It's about how much time I got left. How much time do I have left to get real and to get honest and to get right with the God of my understanding and my sponsor and my sponsees and my family and the people about me? That's what it's about. The weekend, first week in December, I get to go down to Gainesville, Florida with Mr. Bill and all the guys in our family tree, all the guys he sponsors, all the guys we sponsor, all the guys they sponsor, and then all the guys that everybody invited. And we get to sit down and cry like grown men should. And we get to talk about the things we should be talking about in Narcotics Anonymous. Not about, "Damn boss pissed me off today, boy, I'm going to kick his ass. He's lucky I wasn't using, man." That ain't what meetings are about. Meetings are about a woman on a passing bus looked at me funny today and I feel like shit and I don't know why. I hurt like hell in here and I don't know why. I need some help with the steps. Who's willing to help me? This damn idiot calls me at 1 o'clock in the morning from Missouri or someplace. "Bubba, listen up, got a new joke." Sitting at home in tents watching the playoffs. "What's wrong with Bonilla, Bubba?" Called me 3 days ago. "How's Mary doing? She okay? Give her a hug for me. Tell her I love her. Tell her it's going to be okay. You need anything? You all right? You're lying." And he knows. This guy's been my friend. He's been my enemy. We've argued. We've fought. We've disagreed. We've told each other, "fuck you." We've called each other motherfucker, asshole. And we've held each other in each other's arms and cried like babies. It's okay to disagree today. We just don't have to be disagreeable. All right. I don't like everything about everybody I sponsor. But I love everything about what they're about to be. And that's all I have to wait for. A guy gave me a poem one time and said, did you waste a day or lose it? Or was it well or poorly spent? And did you leave a ray of sunshine or a scar of discontent? And as you close your eyes in slumber, do you think your higher power would say, you deserve another tomorrow by the message you carried today? I'm truly grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm truly humbled to the committee of people who listens to tapes and become judgmental. Would fight and argue to the point to call me and ask me if I would be willing to come and share at your convention. Because I don't have anything else more than you have. Because you gave it to me. The only thing I can tell you is what you've already given me. And if you didn't like what you heard, quit fucking giving it to me. Because I got it from you. But if you do quit giving it to me, I'm going to still knock on your door at 3 in the morning and find out why. Because I got to have it. I'd like you just to take a moment of silence. Touch somebody next to you. And just for a minute, think about their pain. Nobody's told you today that they love you. I do. And I thank you for loving me enough to allow me to be here. I'll keep coming back. Thanks.